Good evening, this is Gary Kavanagh here on the right side. Today is Wednesday, the 22nd of January. We are still in the glorious election, which is now going slightly better for Fine Gael. But we were going to talk about the opinion polls, but that's been entirely displaced by two new and very important stories. Is that a goat with a human face has been born? Michael has the details on that. Apparently it's a god.
Well, I would like to say, I don't think that the opinion polls and the election has been completely displaced, but it's probably worth pointing out.
People want to hear about the divine goat, Michael.
That a goat has been born. Well, no, sorry. God has been born. An avatar of God, at least.
Which God?
It doesn't specify. I'm going on the basis that there's only one God. But, you know, answers on the back of a postcard.
I don't know. I feel like there's sort of people who believe that God has become delivered an avatar of a goat with a human face. Are not sort of people who believe in one God.
You see, now you're entering into the very tricky area of whether or not Hinduism is a monotheism or a polytheism. People outside of the Hindu tradition say is the Islamic approach historically, as well as that of the Christians, is to view Hinduism as being polytheistic. Hindus themselves don't see it like that. That rather, that the 7,000 deities or whatever it is that inhabit the Hindu pantheon are somewhere between saints or expressions of the deity who is the Supreme One. Hindus talk about God. Hindus say, I believe in God, and we should thank God. They don't say gods. I think it's a different way maybe of conceiving monotheism.
Could it be a Shinto goat?
I don't think so. I don't think Shinto has a big demographic in Rajasthan. So,
I've never heard of a Shinto god becoming a goat. But, I mean, I suppose I wouldn't, would I?
You think they keep...
Sorry, it's a goat with a human face. Does it give people commands?
It's only a baby goat.
Okay, so if one was looking for a new god...
It's very small.
Who might later begin giving commandments, this would be the start-up opportunity of gods.
This would be an...
Get in on the ground
this
floor.
This would be an opportunity to get in on the ground floor. The owner of the goat is Mushiji Prajapap. From the village of Neumodia on the outskirts of Jaipur, which I'm told is very lovely, and he may even be interested in taking some offers for the goat. I don't know. Now, it should be said that the usual bunch of naysayers and skeptics and atheist scientists types who style themselves experts have suggested the goat suffers from a rare congenital defect known as cyclopia, which I presume comes from Cyclops. Well, the Cyclops only had one eye. Anyway, where the genes, which under normal circumstances create facial symmetry, failed to properly express. There's a picture of the goat. The goat is quite cute, bit disconcerting looking, but long ears. I don't know if it's an Angora goat or what kind of goat it is.
But does its face look human? Is this like Jesus in a piece of toast, or is this like... Because one would think if a god was going to incorporate as a goat with a human face, the human face would be perfect.
What's a perfect face, you know?
I believe scientists would say it's one with a high degree of symmetry.
I think that's what they call a beautiful face. Perfect face.
Is the goat not beautiful, Michael?
Well, I think beauty is very much an expression... Also, you know, when you're looking at a picture of God in a photograph, you never get the real sense, do you?
I don't know. I've never looked at a picture of God in a photograph.
You know, the photographs, I've always felt the photographs of Jesus don't do him any justice. So, maybe it's a problem there. But there is a short video where the goat is seen, and I'm quoting here, adorably stumbling and wagging its short tail.
Okay, so it's either a divine messenger, which will one day begin passing information onto its followers, or it's a goat with a genetic defect who struggles to stand.
Well, no, I don't think it's struggling to stand. I think the adorable stumbling is reference to the extreme youth of the goat. And very small animals do tend to sometimes be a bit wobbly. Now, it's worth pointing out, as the serious newspaper that reporting this story does, that in India it is common for such animals to attract a great deal of attention, many considering them to be an avatar of God. A mutant cow was recently born in the Bardhaman district of West Bengal. The cow was worshipped by locals as an avatar of God until it sadly died aged 4 months. Only last month, a mutant calf was born in Argentina with a small nose and a mouth and apparently resembled a grumpy human face. However, there are no reports that in Argentina was it considered to be an object of worship. So there you go. That's the story. I don't know why we are talking about this, except that you seem to be entranced by the story.
You very much did not want to talk about the goat, the magical goat. I just thought it was an interesting story. I hope that one day the goat will inform its followers about the joys of a low-tax, low-regulation economy.
Well, goats are notoriously free market.
I think anyone who has seen a goat stand on the side of a mountain, majestically staring at you with that deep pit of hatred they have in their eyes,
mm-hmm.
has known that goat follow the Austrian school of economics.
Definitely. Sheep, on the other hand, at the very best, Keynesians.
And chickens, obviously communists.
Obviously.
Which is why we eat them. And it's also why if you look a chicken in the eye, you see an endless pit of stupidity.
Yeah, there isn't much going on in a chicken eye.
And that is the right side recreation of Animal Farm.
And I just want to make it clear that when Gary said that's why we eat them, he was referring to chickens and not to communists. Although, it is worth...
No. Chickens are eaten, communists are thrown from helicopters.
It is worth reminding that... this is not funny. I don't know why I'm laughing. It's not funny. It's true, but it's not funny. That at one period after the Holodomor, after I think it was, if it was connected to it, I don't know, probably was connected to the great Ukraine.
I wouldn't have thought Ukrainian, after the laughter, Holodomor was what was coming.
The great Ukrainian famine, that it was considered to be a useful thing to do by the Soviet government to produce posters reminding people that it's wrong to eat your children.
Is it though?
Well, it has historically been frowned upon.
I just like the idea of someone looking at their child and then looking at a picture of Stalin on the wall and then being like, ah?
Really?
Ah?
Wrong?
Maybe it's better I eat them than leave them for Stalin.
Well, there was a sense that Stalin was going...
Stalin breaking into Hungarian houses at night eating their children. Wouldn't have put it past him.
No, not if he was in one of his moods.
So we have the polls. Do you want to do the polls now, or will we go to the hilarious NWCI?
I think we'll leave that for last, because that's right, that's good stuff. Now, you said, if I heard you right, that the new poll was better news for Fine Gael. Well, I would take issue with that, which will be, I'm sure, a source of great consternation in amongst the reader or the listener. I suppose what you're referring to is the fact that the Fianna Fáil, rather than being on 32%, are on 25%, which is odd because instead of going up 5 points, there are absolutely no change. I'd say it's actually very bad news for Fine Gael, because while the two polls disagree in almost every other way, they agree almost exactly on one thing. And that's a steep, precipitous indeed decline in Fine Gael's vote. In the first, the Behaviours and Attitudes poll, Fine Gael were down 7. And in the MRBI Ipsos poll, they are down 6. And that's pretty close bananas. And if we were to repeat what you were saying in the first, when we talk about the first poll, individual numbers mean whatever they mean, more or less accurate, some more or less, and people would always look Atopore they don't like is an outlier or it's flawed for this reason or that. You look for the trend. Go for the trend. Cherche la trend. And the trend in this case is very clear. Fine Gael down either 6 or 7 points. And if they're down 6 or 7 points, Fine Gael are in big old trouble.
I don't think I actually said this poll was better news for Fine Gael. No, well, but I appreciate your construction of conflict.
Well, you can go
I think I said it was worse news for Fianna Fáil.
Well, you can, like the reader you, or the listener, you can go back to the beginning and listen to it again if you're bothered.
No, I said this was a better week for Fine Gael.
How was it a better week for Fine Gael?
Well, no one has said anything racist or killed a homeless man.
How do you know? How do you know these things? You mean it wasn't in the papers? And we all know what that means. Massive cover-up of racial homeless killings going on all over the country and not being reported upon. That's what's going on.
Maybe it's the influence of that goat.
It's the Pacific influence of the goat. As regards the... Well, geez, has it been a... Well, whenever this poll was taken for, it wasn't this week. Was a good week? When, I can't think of... Why was it... No.
I did like the Irish Times take on the poll. Because the Irish Times commissioned the poll.
Yes.
And their headline was, "Numbers point the wrong direction for Fine Gael." Which is an astute observation.
Yeah, that was brilliant. Brilliant analysis.
Just the Irish Times editorial team. Like, numbers go down.
Yeah. It's very much... It's one of those... It's a, which way, you know, which way Everest up? This, it's, there are a number of things that will, I would say, be of concern, and certainly some curiosities if we look at the poll and compare them. But certainly, okay, on the face of it, I mean, if the listener is unaware, Fianna Fáil are on 25, Fine Gael on 23, and then Sinn Féin on, is it 20?
2021.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, they've previously polled at that and come in at, you know, 13 to 15% on the actual polling day.
Yeah, 25, 23, which is down 6, and 21, which is up 7. Now, they have them up 7. The other poll had Sinn Féin on 19, which was down 1. So, it, and as you say, Gary, there is a long history of Sinn Féin polling strongly at different stages during election campaigns and then reverting back to their base point. Now, that's another reason why I would say that this is also not bad news for Fianna Fáil, particularly when you look at the way that 21% of that Sinn Féin vote is distributed. If it is to be the case, as it usually is, that those votes eventually sheer away and then the outcome is the best. The party, and if it is also the case that Sinn Féin, particularly outside of Dublin, is responding to a particular demographic which tends to be younger men, working, socially conservative, quite patriotic, but open to some kinds of, some government intervention in the economy, but not necessarily madly into high taxes, you know. The Sinn Féin voter tends a lot of the time to be less left-wing than the Sinn Féin activist or the Sinn Féin rep. But if those people don't come out and vote Sinn Féin, the natural home for those people is going to be Fianna Fáil. That's particularly the present incarnation of Fianna Fáil. It seems unlikely to me that Fianna Fáil are static at 25. I would have thought that the chances are
for
that...
3 months?
Yeah, you know. Like, 3 months ago, they weren't... They were on 25, not having a brilliant time. Fine Gael was doing reasonably well. Leo was doing very well. So for them, in the context of what's been happening for the last month or so, for Fianna Fáil to be stuck on the 25, I'm sceptical about that. The other, and obviously everything we say is usually the caveats about these. The other thing that strikes me as about this particular poll as smelly is if you look at the regional breakdown. Now, obviously, the smaller the sample size, the greater the margin of error. You can do 10 minutes in the margin of error if you like later on. But in Leinster outside of Dublin, it has Sinn Féin on 26%, Fine Gael on 24%, and Fianna Fáil on 22%. Now, Sinn Féin outside. Now, I would point out that the other poll has Fianna Fáil outside of Dublin on 30% and Sinn Féin on 19%. And that's a fair big difference in positioning. But I just don't see 26% in Dublin outside of Dublin. I don't see where these votes are coming from. You don't have Sinn Féin did very badly in the locals, and the locals are really not that long ago. You had Sinn Féin losing, Sinn Féin down to no councillors in Kilkenny, couple in Carlow, lost councillors, including Maidan, who was their general election candidate, lost his council seat in Wexford. Lee Shoffley, I can't see them increasing their vote there, because while Brian Stanley will do well, I'm sure chances are he will be elected, the defection of Carol Nolan, she'll surely bring some of her Sinn Féin vote with her. Wicklow, unless something incredible, again, Meath West, you have Padraig Tobin, who Paddy Power have priced to take a seat. Is it Meath West or Meath? He's Meath West, isn't he? Not East. Mm-hmm. Meath East is McEntee, Thomas O'Brien. Yeah. So he's in Meath West. So again, you'd imagine that if he does get elected, even if he does, he's going to take some Sinn Féin votes there. So 26%.
And they also, just on this poll, one of the issues is that 20% of the people they polled said they were undecided.
Yeah. Well, there was a pretty big undecided section in the other poll also. In fact, and that's another thing that's slightly different about this poll. If you looked at the other poll, it was actually, in a sense, worse news for Fine Gael in a way, at this point in an election anyway. That if you stripped out the don't knows, it brought Fianna Fáil down to, I think, around 21% for their, so I think it was 21% their core vote, and Fine Gael were down 14% for their core vote.
It was a slightly unusual methodology in that they did in-home interviewing.
Yeah? Really?
Yeah, across 3 days.
16th, 17th, and 18th.
Should be Thursday, Friday, Saturday of last week.
Which was not a good time for Fine Gael. It was not a happy time.
No. But there will be more polls. We will see how they compare to each other.
Listen.
This one seems a bit odd. But the other one also seems a bit odd, but in a different way.
Yeah, exactly. And one suspects that this is a bit of an odd election. But there's one thing they agree about. And that's substantial decline. For the Fine Gael vote.
Yeah.
And so, if nothing else, I would, my suspicion, if I had to put money on it, is that Fine Gael are probably doing a little bit better than that. Up towards 26. Give them another couple of points. Call it 27. And 27 to 23. It puts them in a decent position. Also, I think it's better for them, for a narrative, for the story they're telling, it's better for Fianna Fáil to be closer. A 12-point gap, if you get a poll suddenly in the middle of the campaign and it becomes a big thing, the first poll out, it gets to, it's questioned, it's discounted, it seems strange, and then it's forgotten. So you're then left almost for the next 2.5-3 weeks defending the poll numbers, because every time a new poll comes out and you're not 12 points ahead, it seems like, oh, you're coming back, you're losing ground, you're losing momentum. This is better news. Also, the fact that Sinn Féin is so high may concentrate some minds and make people think, well, maybe better if it's a choice between one and t'other, maybe we'll go for Fianna Fáil rather than risk it otherwise. Now, there was There's for anybody who's interested in these things, I think I don't know if they do their own. Do the betting companies do their own polling, Gary? Do you have any notion about that?
Well, the betting companies can use betting markets to pretty much pull together a poll.
Yeah. Now, I'm
not a poll as such, but a betting market prediction. They can be quite accurate.
They can be. I was a bit skeptical about that kind of thing, but there's an interest. Here's one for divilment, anyway, shall we say. I was looking at Paddy Power's market for the Wexford constituency.
Mm-hmm.
Brendan Howland nailed on 25-1 on. Malcolm Byrne. Now, this I don't understand. Malcolm Byrne is 14-1 on, and James Brown is 8-1 on, which means that Malcolm Byrne is considered to be much more likely to be elected than James Brown, which I just don't believe. I think James Brown's seat is as safe as Howland's. However, then we come to, so that's two Philip all, one Labour. Paul Keogh and Michael Darcy are both priced in at 7-4 on. And Verona Murphy, do you remember Verona?
I do, yes.
Verona's priced at 6-4 on.
Hmm.
Which is suggesting that Paddy Power marginally thinks that Verona is going to get elected. Because it seems to me that, well, the way the odds work, that for both 7-4 on shots to be elected is less likely than a 4-6 shot. I'm just curious to know if they're simply working off the base of betting markets or if they do their own very substantial polling there, because that would see Fine Gael reduced to one seat in Wexford. Wexford is a bellwether constituency, whether it's referenda or whether it's our elections. And for them to go down to, I see this is a constituency where on one occasion in my lifetime they held three seats and were getting over 40% of the first preference vote. For them to fall.
Yeah, but were they competent at that time?
No, they were Fine Gael.
Fair point.
In fact, they were in fact actually in, well, if you were involved to get into a kind of, you know those, oh, for God's sake, how could you ever vote for Fianna Fáil again? Look what they did. My response is not to defend Fianna Fáil, but rather to say, lads, you know, competence and incompetence is not a question that Irish politicians should be fighting. These are very much, this is a scenario of two bald men fighting over a comb. That would have been back in the time of Garda Fitzgerald, the 82 to 87 Garda Fitzgerald government, which tripled the national debt and led us to a situation where we were weeks away from the IMF coming in, but then led to the McSharry Haughey government, which was one of the great governments of our time, which saved the country and turned it around and made us rich. It was that government, if you wanted to, a Bible lesson in bad governance, the great Fine Gael government of 82 to 87 is up there with others. Just one other constituency that I thought was cute, it's interesting to have a look at. Lots of fun. You can get this online, of course, for anybody who's interested. I was looking at Laois Offaly. And Charlie Flanagan is 14-1 on, which, having talked to people from Laois Offaly recently who are Fine Gaelers, they will be astounded at that, because they keep telling me everybody they know has vowed never to vote for Charlie again. Cowan is 10-1 on, and Fleming 8-1 on for the two Fianna Fáilers. And then Brian Stanley taking what? Marcella Corcoran Kennedy and John Lahey in a bitter fight for the fifth seat. John Lahey, remember, was until recently leader of Renewa. Is now running as an independent, which is probably a better brand for him in Laois Offaly, I'd say, than Renewa. Marcella Corcoran Kennedy, quite a figure inside Fine Gael, And again, the tight betting there, 6-4, Marcella Cork, John Lahey, 6-4, Karen Nolan, also running as an independent now, 7-4, and then Peter Ormond, the third, Fianna Fáil, coming in at 5-2. So, an absolute battle royal there. I suspect Karen Nolan, I suspect, will lose out on that. I don't, from what I'm hearing. And may well indeed elect Lahey. Her transfers could be the key to that. But that would be, again, in a five-seater, Fine Gael down to one. And according to the betting in Tipperary, again, Fine Gael will be left without a seat in the whole of Tipperary. Unless, of course, you count Lowry, which, of course, we don't, because he and Fine Gael are long estranged and will remain so, I'm sure. But it's good fun. And if you have, pretty well all the constituencies are up there now, if you want to go online and have a look at them. If anybody spots some fantastic value out there, get in contact, as I say, back of the envelope. Yeah, we could do with the money. We can take five money out of the biscuit barrel and see if we can turn it into some serious cash. Now, somebody who doesn't lack for serious cash, Gary, is the National Women's Council.
They do, and so either the National Women's Council, because of the election, have put out the Feminist Ireland 2020 manifesto. And I noticed this, I'd noted it before, but I actually started paying attention to it because they started coming out and endorsing candidates there.
No.
And the National Women's Council, well, I say endorsing, but you know, I suspect they would say they're not endorsing them. They're merely putting up their pictures and saying this person signed their pledge, you know, if you're voting in the area, go check them out. But I say that's an endorsement. And the reason I noticed this recently is because listeners will know of the story of Joe Lochnan, the People for Profit candidate in Galway, who was on recorded saying, I sort a lot of people out with a lot of drugs in this city, and that became its own story. And Mr. Lochnan also was previously before the courts in 2013 on two charges of assault against Gardaí. And that's kind of guy he is. And the National Women's Council Passions. Just endorsed him.
Yes. Now, couple of questions here, Gary. Just a couple of questions. We'll start off with, first of all, why the National Women's Council, which, to my memory, basically a publicly funded body, doing endorsing candidates?
Because in Ireland we pay money to NGOs to lobby the government
for more money. The government, and this, and I'm saying this, dear listener, this is not me being smart or sarky or horrible or right wing. This is simply what they do. The government pays lobby groups in order to fund their capacity to lobby the government, to get the government to give you more money to whatever their pet project is. It's not that they do anything, but that they get the government to take your tax dollars and spend it on their passionate project. Secondly, if the National Women's Council is in the business of endorsing candidates, and let's remember it is a representative body, constantly referred to and quoted on newspapers and the TV, the National Council. How many members does it have, Gary? Paid up members?
It doesn't actually say. Now, if you go into their accounts, they do break down individual membership fees.
Yeah.
Technically, the Women's Council is also, a load of women's organisations are members of it.
Yes, the ICA, for example.
To some extent. I'm not sure how close the links are there. It may just be a sort of,
I think,
you're a member.
I think, depending on the size of your organisation, therefore possibly the size of your contribution, that you may get a seat on the board ex officio. Because I seem to remember the ICA has a member on the board, because during the Eighth Amendment that became something of a hot topic issue amongst members of the ICA.
So, for actual individual members, they get about 11,000 a year. Now, to be an individual member of the National Women's Council of Ireland, assuming you are employed, it costs €60 a year. So they probably have somewhere in the region of 190 members.
190 members. So less than a small hurling club.
Yeah, pretty much. They make almost all of their money from the state. I mean, the Department of Justice and Equality in 2018 in one single grant gave them 520,000.
Half a mil.
Yeah. Now, and yet they're losing money.
But to return, and there are many interesting questions there, but just why are they endorsing well-known party organizer, Mr. Loughnane?
Well, because Mr. Loughnane signed their manifesto, their Feminist Ireland 2020 manifesto.
And is that the only criteria that the Women's Council think you need to have to in order to be a suitable member of the Oireachtas?
Yes, that would appear to be the case. I must go back and see if one of the Gardaí that Mr. Loughnane was brought up on charges of assault was a woman.
You see, I was thinking precisely at the time you said that once upon a time it would have been reported he had assaulted a guard and a vanguard, but of course we don't have vanguards anymore, we only have guards. So one of them may well indeed have been a...
Would you like to know what's in the Feminist Ireland manifesto?
Well, since you withheld it from me before, saying that it would be better to do this live and on air, I'm curious, number one, how many points are there? How many manifesto items do we have?
It's broken down into 10 different items, each of which have 3 or 4 bullet points.
Go on.
All right, so... Here's the first one. Implement a national programme of public housing.
Implement a national programme.
Introduce an emergency rent freeze. End direct provision. Provide traveller accommodation.
So, are they a political party? Obviously, I know exactly the response they would say. Well, housing, homelessness affects women most of all. But actually, statistically, are men far more likely to be homeless than women?
Oh, by not just a small margin, by a substantial margin.
So end direct provision. Again, do we have a disproportionate number of women in direct provision?
I wouldn't have thought so. I would have thought that was actually... I actually don't know, but I would have expected that to be aligned towards men as well.
Well, we get disproportionately large number of the people who apply for refugee status are men, rather than women. So, but maybe the people who go into direct provision is different. Traveller housing? What was this?
Traveller accommodation.
Traveller accommodation.
And don't forget the rent freeze, an emergency rent freeze.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
And then you go on, deliver slantra care.
Deliver
slantra care.
Go on.
Yeah. These ones are actually about women. Develop women-centred mental health services. Fully resource publicly owned maternity and infant services.
Sorry,
Introduce universal free contraception.
Develop
mental
women
health service.
Health. Yeah, because we all know that men's mental health situation is just tickety-boo.
Don't know what that means.
It doesn't matter what it means. What matters is that the money is spent.
So, increase investment in affordability, affordable quality public health care and paid parental leave. Ensure workers earn at least a living wage.
You have to go back now. Go back. What was the health care thing?
I mean, Michael, there's a lot of options there. Introduce universal free contraception.
Universal free contraception. Why?
Yeah, Mike, from looking at this thing, there are parts of it that relate to women, but there are also parts of it that are just really left-wing.
I have to say...
The NWCI doesn't seem to distinguish...
So go on, hit me.
So Ensure workers earn at least a living wage.
Living wage, not minimum wage, living wage. Okay.
Support lone parents with targeted resources. Then there's three items on violence against women.
They're against it.
Yeah, on closer review, they do in fact appear to be against it.
Okay. Well, I'm relieved.
Unless, you know, that might threaten their funding, in which case I don't know where they would stand. They've three on abortion. They want safety zone legislation brought in.
Absolutely.
They want locally to be able to provide the full range of abortion service locally, which I don't know if that's saying set up abortion clinics, as we see in kind of Britain and other countries. Guarantee provision of the full range of care in all maternity hospitals. Not sure what they're saying with that and how that
full
would impact on freedom of
care. Yes.
Full range of care. It's a great phrase. Here's the sixth one. Eliminate poverty.
Well, why hadn't some... You see, now, you have to say, Gary, fair play. None of the political parties have suggested that I know of. And that seems like a very good one.
I mean, I think
why hasn't anybody done that before? That's probably a really good idea.
Yeah. I mean, I have a feeling it was probably like a heading on a document at some point. But anyway, within that, the very first one is prioritise investment in social protections and public services over tax cuts.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are people out there that are going home with almost half their wages in their pockets still. I mean, that kind of nonsense can't be allowed to go on.
Benchmark social welfare payments to the minimum essential standard of living.
And how would you define that, I wonder?
With great difficulty, I would imagine. Introduce a universal pension system. End the gender pay gap and deliver decent work for women. Not sure how the government would deliver decent work for women.
And what would decent work be? Like, for example, say somebody, a woman who decided she wanted to work in, say, like, a house, right? And she had children and she would keep the children in the house and she would take care of them in this place. And feed them and wash them and stuff like that. And organise the house and the house accounts and do...
Well,
that.
I mean, considering it is the NWCI saying this, I would imagine they determine decent work to be receiving $520,000 from the Department of Justice Equality for provide a woman's equality analysis on all policy area and consult with women and women's organisation.
I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to guess that decent work... is work where you earn enough to be able to pay a woman from a poorer country to stay at home and mind your children.
Probably. Legislate for wage transparency. Improve flexible working and move towards a four-day week.
I'm happy to legislate for wage transparency. But anyway, go on. Four-day week. Legislate. We don't want any of this nonsense about companies or private individuals.
Well, I mean, this is for election candidates. Everything here has to be legislative.
Sweet Jesus.
Legislative for collective bargaining rights, because we don't have enough of those. Advance women's leadership by introducing gender quotas in local elections. Create a woman-friendly Uktaros. Doesn't say what that means or how that would be done. Legislate for a 40% quota for women on corporate boards.
Wine bars, more pink, soft furnishings.
40% quota for women on corporate boards?
Oy.
Ooh, here's one.
Why not 50? Why not 60? Why?
Because the NWCI is not a radical organisation and wants to be perfectly reasonable about this.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah. Increase funding for the women's sector, which I would imagine the NWCI would consider themselves to be part of.
No, the women's sector is the NWCI, and their mates. Anybody that, if you're a member of the National Women's Council, or if you're related to them, or if you're in a reading club, or a dining club, or play tennis with them, they should be all included in that.
Of course. Lead a Green New Deal. Gender and poverty-proof all climate and environmental policies. End support for fossil fuels.
No, stop. Sorry, say that one again.
Gender and poverty-proof all climate and environmental policies.
Gender? And, oh, that is... I mean, seriously, what do they think? I mean, they're going to gender, they're going to, I am fairly confident, advocate for fairly heavy duty climate policy. But the same policy has to be gender and poverty proofed. So this is going to involve Dumbledore. This is, no, more than Dumbledore. You're going to need all of the wizards and witches to stand out with their wands and point them into the sky to achieve that one. And also, gender. Does that mean that you make sure that it, poor people and women don't get affected by the policies, but you can screw men into the wall?
Well, I mean, I think in certain points, the NWCI FemGen agenda is quite regressive in that, I mean, in some cases it uses women, in some cases it uses gender, which would indicate that they think there's some difference between those things, that there is some biological component to being a woman, which would
seem
to be transphobic.
Possibly deeply patriarchal,
Michael.
I'm gonna say I'll have to check and reread it myself, because I'm deeply skeptical about the notion that there could be transphobia going on at the National Women's Council. That seems
anyway,
to me to be
on the next
unlikely.
Thing that you must do that an election candidate must agree to in order to be endorsed by the National Women's Council of Ireland, who are there to support women, end support for fossil fuel projects, and reduce Ireland's greenhouse gas emissions by at least 8% annually.
8%?
8%
annually.
Yeah.
And they,
which, unless and we're they just want to burning people in the city squares now.
They want to poverty-proof that. Do they really? Seriously?
Well, I mean, maybe there's a little bit of give and take here. To develop a rural and urban public transport infrastructure, including a national cycle network. I would love to see the feminist reasons for requiring a national cycle network.
Honest to God.
Anyway, we're nearly done, Michael. We're nearly done. Last item.
Yes?
Well, the last set of items. Guarantee access to justice. Introduce a statutory maintenance agency, which I don't know what they mean. Provide full redress to all survivors of institutional abuse. Develop a new family courts model. Doesn't say what model they like. And introduce legislation and policies to combat racism and discrimination, which sounds like support hate speech laws.
Oh no, sounds like a lot more than that.
Well, to start with. And that is their manifesto. That is their manifesto.
I don't believe that the Revolutionary Socialist Party of Ireland has a manifesto as left-wing as that.
Yeah, it is quite weird that you're like, I want to get the endorsement of the Women's Council because I want to support women in Ireland. And then they come back to you with this and you just sort of go, lads, this is fucking mad.
That's looper. I mean,
I know.
Looper stuff.
That might be why nearly everyone I've seen signing up to it is a people for profit activist.
I mean, 8% annually. I mean, 8% annually. That's
like, get rid of all your electrical goods.
That would be by half of in what, 6 years? You would have half. We'd have to have our what are we going to use instead? Are we going to import? I mean, the only option we would have would be to import. Would we be allowed to do that? Would we be allowed to import electricity from France?
I think that's how we're going to get around a lot of these things. We're going to take nuclear power from France. And then we'll say, oh, we've really cut down. Your friend James Brown from Wexford is a signatory to that, by the way.
To which?
That manifesto. He has signed it.
He has not.
He has signed it.
I will be in contact with James. Oh, my God. Seriously.
Yeah, he's on their Twitter. James Brand has signed up to our. They're saying their FemGem manifesto for women's equality, because God knows if there's not a national cycling infrastructure, women are not equal in this country.
Is Malcolm on it?
I don't know. I'm just going through it now. So we've got Deirdre Conroy is on it.
Right.
It's mostly like Social Democrats. Sinn Féin, People Before Profit, because Shane Ellis from Leitrim, Sligo Leitrim. Mary Fitzpatrick has signed.
Well, that's like, I mean, I think it's madness, but Mary Ellis, I'm surprised that he, decent people, sensible Western people.
They managed to get someone from Fine Gael to sign?
No, who?
Oh, Josepha Madigan.
Never been known to let you down, Josepha. God, woman.
Oh, Josepha Madigan. There's a couple of Fianna Fáilers. Ollie Crowe, Galway West. Lorraine Clifford Lee.
Not Catherine Noon.
Not that I've seen so far.
Catherine, you see, might have done the sneaky, tricky thing of actually reading the document first before she signed it.
Deirdre Duffy from Fine Gael. She is the, I believe, the former. Was she the former organiser of Together for Yes?
I don't know why, Gary, but for a brief moment I was kind of thinking or hoping, maybe, that you were about to tell me she was the former director of Duffy Circus.
That would be very fun.
That would have been rather better, but yes, I think you are correct in that, yes.
Aidan O'Riordan has, of course, signed it.
Naturally.
Presumably the national cycle infrastructure will not go through his constituency.
Because if it does,
that's not getting built. Catherine Zappone is, of course. Kate O'Connell from Fine Gael. I'm just ignoring all of the left-wing people.
Kate O'Connell. I mean, whatever you think about Kate O'Connell on certain issues, Kate O'Connell on that economics. These people did not read it. They didn't even get an aid. They just said, oh, there's a women's council. Do you want to sign? Oh, yeah, it'll be all about women. And
sure, what could be wrong with supporting women?
Yeah, go on.
And before you know it, you've just lent your support to a Green New Deal.
Oh, God. Anybody else? I was curious to see if Malcolm was on it, because I'll tell you, if James Brown is on that, Malcolm isn't on it, I would be amazed if a sensible person would make a photocopy of out of pushing through every letterbox in an Enniscore thing. This is what your local TD supports.
Yeah, oh, it's...
That is... I'm feeling better now. That is genuinely... That's comedy. That is... Now, of course, it's not comedy, actually, because these people are being paid. Large... I mean, if you break down the money that they get from the state, the vast majority of it goes straight into salaries. These people are paid and being well paid by taxpayers to do this. To lobby for this kind of thing, which would have, how many votes would that get? That platform, how many votes would that get, you know? And yet, they are being funded to the tune of, every year, 700, 800,000 grand, you know? Honest to God, I think it would be better off spending it on, if you want to help women around, okay, help, there's a group of, women and the elderly could be helped by doing this. Provide free bingo buses.
I would actually love to see them argue for how these things fall within their remit. Because a lot of them you can. You just need to make your feminism intersectional enough. You're like, well, why do we need a national program of public housing? You just talk about women in homelessness. But the classical error that political groupings make, where they stop seeing the distinction between things that can impact on women and things that are women's issues.
Uh-huh.
Where you see with everything, we're like, oh, well, we students, we need to talk about these things because there could be a student who's impacted on them by them. Yeah. Yes, but they're not impacted. It doesn't impact on them because they're a student.
This is true.
Whereas this just seems like someone who went, what is every potential issue that could ever impact on a woman at any point? It ticks all of them.
Well, it goes pretty well from what could impact on a human being to what could impact on a mammalian life form on the face of the earth. And that's fairly comprehensive. I mean, somebody spent time and effort, and I'm sure there were long discussions, which were effectively paid for by the Irish taxpayer. To produce
I had a little look at their accounts to see how much money they actually spend on projects versus wages. Because a lot of the thing about, you know, government-led organizations, if you have to deal with the public, you tend to be a little bit sharper in your accounts, because the public year on year can just go, no, you wasted our money, we're not giving you anything.
Yes.
Whereas if you get, let's say, nearly all of your income from the government, as the National Women Councils of Ireland does, there's not a lot of incentive to be careful with that money. Because why would you? I mean, here's the thing. They brought in hundreds of thousands in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Hundreds, nearly €1 million. 21,256 euro of that came from donations. And another 33,000 came from either individual memberships or group memberships.
And 2018 was a high point.
Because of the referendum, yeah. No, they didn't bring in that much more money than they did in 2017. But unsurprisingly, when you actually look at, like, their administration costs are interesting. So here, they got a grant of 520,000 from the Department of Justice and Equality to provide women's equality analysis on policy areas.
Mm-hmm. Whatever that means.
520,000. The project, and to leverage additional funds to promote women's equality. Of that, 13,437 was sent on projects. Nearly 100,000 was sent on administration costs. And 410,000 was sent on staffing costs.
Right.
I mean, nearly all of their expenditure is either administration, their offices, or staff. I mean, program and project activity, 2018, 75,000. Out of a total spend of 950,000. Nearly everything is staffing.
Well, I can tell you, that's not what happens in the Edinburgh Brook Institute, is it, Gary?
No, because we have to get private money.
Yeah, we...
And people ask questions like, what are you going to do with this money?
I see you had two cappuccinos yesterday. Who's paying for that?
Those chocolate flakes.
Oh.
That's money. That's my money down the drain.
Yeah. No more chocolate flakes this year. I think maybe this is a subject that's worth returning to in the future. It's certainly somebody worth having a look. If there's an auditor out there who would like to have a...
Well, all of these things are audited. It's just the...
Yeah, but if we could have a... Go through it
and get the accountant, have a little bit of a look through it.
It would be fun just to break it down in absolute precise detail. I'm sure everything is done perfectly correctly, and that's what I'm not saying the auditor for that reason, but so we could just see the whole thing schematically, precisely, minutially, say, so we could understand precisely the duration and the nature of the activities.
I do like this from 2018. Direct project costs. So this is the analysis of the charitable expenditure.
Yes.
Their total costs in 2018 were 940,710 euro.
Okay.
So you have three costs. You have direct project costs, you have support costs, and you have governance costs. Government costs are about 22,000.
Okay.
Which is double what they paid in 2017, incidentally.
Mm-hmm.
Direct project costs of 940,000 is 74,000. And support costs are 842,000.
That's support
costs. 720 euro.
That's
now,
good.
Support costs would include staff, office,
obviously,
rent, and communication.
Yeah.
However, they don't spend a lot on communication. They spend a great deal on staff.
And I'm sure they've got a great deal of very great staff.
They also don't try very hard to raise money. Like in 2018, they spent 7,000 euro on trying to raise money. They spent less than 1% of their budget on trying to fundraise.
So I can be confident that none of those people with buckets outside the Bank of Ireland on College Green, none of these are from the National Women's Council.
Oh, and on their governance costs, which were 22,000, professional fees were 9,300, and executive and statutory costs were 8,600.
Oh, okay.
So, and this is pretty standard for government-led NGOs.
Well, I think, other than the fact that reading long lists of numbers is traditionally regarded as being absolutely fascinating radio. I think we're at the risk of exhausting.
I thought people would need to calm down after the goat.
The goat, of course, people are very excited. But it is good rapid stuff. And as I said, I think people can go online and read it themselves, but I think maybe this is something we might go back to and have a look at it and maybe some other institutions at a date later. However, it is time to release the hounds, as they said, back into the wild. We shall be returning at the weekend. Who knows, by next Sunday, there may even be another opinion poll for us to spend 25 minutes wittering on about. But in the meantime, as usual, I'd like to wish all of our politicians and their canvassers and workers well. And to remind your listener, be nice to them. You won't see them for another few years, and you'd miss them if they weren't there. So, bye-bye.
All the best.